Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable. Your exposure ends here.
Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Well, folks, we're in the thick of it now. The dog days of summer. Hottest, longest days of the year. And it's a balmy 79 degrees in my office. And it's pushing 90 here in the studio. The things we sacrifice for sound quality. Anyway, the point is, it is hot out there. And as my mom says, this kind of heat brings out the weirdos. And I suppose, weird experiences as well. And if it's weird experiences you want, I have them in spades for you this evening. So let's get this show started. Joining us from the land of steady habits, please welcome Brittany. From Connecticut.
Hi, Derek. My name is Brittany. I'm from southeastern Connecticut. I have two stories about apparitions of ghosts that I've seen. So I'll start with the one that happened first. So this is when my husband and I were still just dating, probably back in 2012. I'm not quite sure of the time of year. I think it was like spring, summer, maybe late summer. I know it was nice out. But anyways, I was at my mother-in-law's. Background on her. She is a psychic, does, you know, meditation. There's lots of crystals in this room that I saw the apparition. So their family's very big into all of that, and as am I. So one evening, I was sleeping in my boyfriend's time's room. And their little mini dash hound loved me. So anytime I slept over, she slept in the bed with us and she had to go to the bathroom. So I got up and I went to go bring her outside. So it's my boyfriend at the time's bedroom and then a bathroom next to it. And then you walk out into my mother-in-law's office where she has all of her crystals, tarot cards, all the psychic, all the meditation things. So anyways, I walk out there, go to let the dog out. There's a door right there on the porch where the dog can go to the bathroom, and then we'll go back in. Let her out. I lock the door. I turn around to my right, and she does have a computer there, but nothing was on. There was no light. And I saw what looked like an apparition, kind of see-through, kind of sparkly, not really Glimmer Man looking, but it was kind of glimmery, but not that type. I've heard, you know, the stories about Glimmer Man before. Nothing like that. But he was like see-through, kind of colorful, sparkly. Anyways, he was knelt down, like kind of crouching with his hands over his face. I could see the helmet. Kind of like what you would see in, like, I want to say Revolutionary Time. I could be wrong, but this like helmet and then two guns sticking out the back, like his back. So I could see like the whole outline of him crouching, the gun sticking out, like he was crouching to not scare me. That's like the vibe I got, was like he was here and he was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to scare her. So he crouched down. And it must have been at least like, you know, snap of a finger that I saw him and then he was gone. And I kind of shook my head and was like, okay. That was weird. But I went back to bed. It didn't scare me or anything, but it was weird. So next morning, I told my boyfriend at the time about it, and he goes, "Oh, that's Bob." I was like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, we believe he's a German soldier. We heard him talking over the radio over some static. We asked, like, what his name was, and we heard Bob. So we think his name is Bob." So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting that I didn't know about this Bob soldier at the time. Just kind of getting to know, like, each other and ghost stories from their house. They've seen a lot. I've seen and heard a couple more things there, but Bob was really interesting. And yeah, that was my first like real apparition sighting. So the fact he validated it was really amazing. Derek, I love your show. I listen to it all the time. I'm still catching up from all the seasons, but I listen to every new episode. I'd love to hear this one. I'd love to hear you play it, but keep up the good work. Keep it spooky. And I'll call back soon. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Brittany. Ain't that something? You know, I used to date a girl when I lived back in Columbus, Ohio, that lived on the corner of Goodale Park, just off of 670 near downtown. And when she learned that I had an interest in all things esoteric, she was quick to tell me about a Union soldier she had seen floating above her bed on a number of occasions. He was just standing there, she said, not looking at her, but not looking happy or content either, floating a few feet above her bedroom floor. Well, this girl was from the south and had recently moved to the area, so she likely would not have known that the ground in which her apartment complex was built used to be a training camp called Camp Jackson. Now, during its peak, Camp Jackson was the home of some 8,000 Union troops as they trained for action down south. And among the officers stationed at the facility were two future presidents, Rutherford B. Hayes, a distant relation of mine, and William McKinley. And to double down on her strange experience in subsequent validation, I'd mentioned that she told me the figure was floating a few feet above the ground in her bed. Well, coincidentally, her apartment was a basement unit, so technically she was 4 or 5 feet below ground level, which would imply that back in the 1860s, a soldier standing on that very spot would be hovering exactly where she said she saw him floating. Now, although it's not my story nor my experience, I am loosely involved, and I do enjoy sharing the tale. That whole city is probably wrought with ghosts from that awful war. The infamous Camp Chase was only a couple of miles away, home to 2,229 known deaths during its time as a training facility, Confederate POW camp, and a prison. And truthfully, I feel the same way about Connecticut. There were many battles that have occurred within those state lines, though most many, many years ago. But there is one skirmish that occurred in the Constitution State that took place right where Brittany said she had her sighting. The Battle of Ridgefield, where somewhere near 100 American, British, and even Hessian soldiers met their end. Now, if you're doubting those claims, check this out. Back in 2020, human remains were discovered under a home near Main Street in Ridgefield, Connecticut, that are believed to be the remains of Hessian soldiers who fought in the Battle of Ridgefield. This, according to the Ridgefield Historical Society and the Connecticut State Historic Preservation Office. But you know, I don't know where Brittany lived exactly, but Southwest Connecticut is not that big of a place, so I imagine wherever she is, she's got to be close to Ridgefield. And I'll end this segment with a little observation, not only from me, but from our research department as well. Ironically, we both instantly thought of the Washington Irving story that too features a Hessian soldier. Minus his head, of course.
The dominant spirit, however, that haunts this enchanted region and seems to be commander-in-chief of all powers of the air is the apparition of a figure on horseback without a head. It is said to be, by some, the ghost of a Hessian trooper whose head had been carried away by a cannonball in some nameless battle during the Revolutionary War. Thus, it's universally known as the Headless Horseman. During the Battle of White Plains, right around Halloween, 1776, General William Heath described a Hessian trooper, an artilleryman, getting his head blown away and his horse brought down. And that's where the legend rises. Good folk from Sleepy Hollow and environs found the body and had it buried here in an unmarked grave. The spirit is said to continue to rise up and roam these roads on midnight blasts, seeking that missing head.
And that Washington Irving story is, of course, the infamous legend of Sleepy Hollow. And that clip comes to us on behalf of the Today Show. But of course, the Headless Horseman has little to do with Brittany's tale, other than that a Hessian soldier was involved in each. And I suppose the fact that both spirits eventually returned from the grave. Well, whatever it was you saw that day, Brittany, we sure do appreciate you sharing it here with us.
Legacy of accomplishment over the...
That's right, the first.
Now, next up, we venture out west to the state of Arizona, where Andrew has a tale waiting and ready.
Hi, this is Andrew calling from Sedona, Arizona. I was camping with my wife and my brother-in-law and sister-in-law and all the kids up at Lake Powell on September 11th, 2022. And we were sitting on the beach at night. And I don't know if any of you all out there know what Lake Powell is like, but imagine the desert in the Roadrunner cartoons where you see these huge monuments sticking up out of the ground. And that's kind of what Lake Powell is, except the monuments are sticking up out of the water. And so it's just this incredible waterscape and then beaches with these monuments all over the place. Just an incredible place. So at night, what people do is they sit on the shores and they congregate around their campfires. Well, when it's not 100 degrees, but they congregate around their little campsites and talk and just look at the stars and that kind of thing. And so everybody had gone to bed except my wife and my brother-in-law. And we were sitting in a triangle shape. So my wife's back was toward the area I was facing. And my brother-in-law was facing me with his back toward the right of me. And so the left of me, we could all see, and they could see behind me, but I couldn't see behind me. So you kind of get an idea of what the shape looked like and how we were sitting. And so in front of me, off to my left, in the distance is this gigantic monument sticking who knows how high up into the sky, but very, very, very high. And then there's other monuments around us, maybe a quarter mile away each. And so as I'm sitting there facing the sky, from out behind the monument, I see this, I want to say kind of a fat, for lack of a better term, but just a thick, round light come from behind the monument. And it couldn't have been that high in the sky. It had to have been within the atmosphere. It wasn't actually behind the monument, but it was way off in the distance and it came into my vision as it moved across the sky. But it was bouncing slowly like a bumblebee. That's the best way I can think to describe it. And as it bounced, it went up a little bit, and then it bounced kind of down a little bit, and then it shot off. And I'm not kidding, it had to have been light speed because of the distance that it was. But it shot off upward at an upward trajectory and disappeared up into the sky. I was floored by this, and as right it happened so quickly, there's no way I could get a video of it. Plus it was dark, so I doubt you'd even see it. But as soon as I noticed it bumbling like a bee, and it went up a little bit, and then it did a couple bounces down. I said, "What is that?" And my brother-in-law turned and looked, and as he turned and looked, he caught the end of it shooting in a straight line up toward space, toward outer space. We both looked at each other, and I was like, "That had to be something like a UFO. It has to be." And he kind of raised his eyebrows, and he was like, "That was crazy." And we just sat, and my wife didn't see it at all, and she was teasing us. But it had to be something extraterrestrial, because I don't think any aircraft that we have or that we know of our enemies having can do something like that did. And just talking about it right now kind of makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up and gives me chills, because it is just, it was incredible to see, and I was just blown away. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. I hope I did a good job explaining that. Thank you so much for the show, Derek and Sarah. Love it. I can't get enough of it. Okay, thanks guys. Have a good night. Bye.
Thank you, Andrew. Now, I've spent some time in Arizona, but I've never actually been to Lake Powell. So perhaps it's time to make my way up there. Especially if there are UFOs hovering in the sky there. And that's exactly what it sounds like Andrew and his brother saw that evening. Some sort of unidentified flying object. And you know, a sighting like that in the state of Arizona would be par for the course. Because Arizona is a known hotbed of activity. The Phoenix Lights and the abduction of Travis Walton both come to mind immediately. But there are also lesser-known cases that, upon closer examination, are equally as mysterious. I'm talking about the UFO crash in Kingman, Arizona, and the alleged alien gray attack on Stardust Ranch. The point being, there's plenty of lore to go around in the Grand Canyon state. So why not add Lake Powell and its aerial anomalies to that list? It certainly sounds like it's worthy. Thank you again, Andrew, for sharing your tale. And folks, if you too have a story to share, a true story, call our toll-free hotline at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or feel free to mail me a voice memo at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Now this next one takes us back to the ghostly realm. Please welcome Angela from Tennessee to tonight's program.
Hey Derek, this is Angela calling from Tennessee. I love the show. I'm a Patreon supporter probably for about a year now, and I just love hearing all the spooky stories that people call in. Anyway, this is a story that happened about 15 years ago when I was just beginning my nursing career. I was starting to train on a day shift job and was heading to work one morning. This actually happened in Kentucky at that time when I was living there. Anyway, traveling to work one morning, I was supposed to be there at 7, so it was way before daylight. It was probably around 6 o'clock. I had like an hour's drive to go. And I had, for the past couple of days, I had to take like a route. They were redoing the road there, the main road, and they were rerouting all the traffic to an older road. Well, it hadn't been open to that much traffic for a while, but it was at the current time. Anyway, I'm driving along, trying to do around 55 miles an hour, but the road is very curving, and like I said, I'm not familiar with it. And all of a sudden, in the distance, this is going to sound weird, even as I say it, I see this lady crossing the road. She has a long dress on, I would say more like a skirt. I don't remember seeing any kind of feet, but I just remember the long swishing of her skirt. She had a long sleeve jacket type of piece of clothing on. I would say it was a short jacket that ended at the waist, and she had a bonnet on. Here my car is barreling at her. I'm serious, 55 miles an hour. And she doesn't look, she doesn't react, she's just crossing across the road. And I know what you're thinking, okay? Lady, if you're traveling 55 miles an hour, when are you going to hit this lady? Well, let me just tell you, that puzzles me too. I'm not going to say that time slowed down, but I do know this. I don't know how in the world that I saw all the detail that I saw, but I did. I saw the little gingham, almost like a gingham type material or like shades of, you know, gray and blue in her skirt. I saw the solid color of her jacket, and she was so unconcerned. She was just passing slowly, walking across the road in front of me. And it was just freaky. I mean, it chilled me, you know. And as I got closer to her, you know, I went past her. And as I looked, tried to look to the side, I could see just like a shimmer, but I couldn't really make out anything. I quickly looked in my rearview mirror to see what I could see, but it was a dark morning. As I said, it wasn't daylight yet. And I don't know. I can't explain it. That part is near the Daniel Boone Forest, that old road there, and it's an old road that I guess at one time, who knows what it might have been. I mean, you know, it was a detour off of US 25B, and so as like the side road, you know, not that that matters. I'm just trying to give some kind of context. I think she was a ghost. To this day, I can remember every little detail about her. I don't know why. If it had been a woman, I would have ran her down. And I don't understand how that I could have seen all the details that I did. But I did. That happened 15, 16 years ago, and I've never forgotten it. I love the show. Keep up all the good work. This is Angela from Tennessee saying goodbye. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Angela. And thanks for supporting us over on Patreon. That's certainly a monumental way to ensure that the show continues to grow. And stay tuned to the very end of this episode to learn how you can join us over in the beyond. Now, I don't know, Angela, if you're going to have a ghost experience. I suppose cruising down the road at 55 miles an hour is probably the best way to do it. A quick glimpse and you're out of there. No opportunity for any funny business. It's just enough to say that you saw it, but not enough to get all the PTSD that sometimes comes with these experiences. Well, regardless, I love the story, and we thank you again, Angela, for taking the time to share it.
First sense since then.
That urgent in providing details.
Well, we're back with more frights. This time from Eric in Colorado.
Hi, Derek. My name is Eric. I'm a big fan of the podcast and kind of got a story I would like to share with you guys. So I'm currently out in Colorado, but this story takes place in my home state of Kansas, actually in the city of Manhattan, which is to the west of Kansas City. And it's a beautiful little area. It's a nice little valley with some trees and lakes. It's very pretty. And in about, an hour and a half to the east is, of course, Stoll, Kansas, which, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast probably knows Stoll, Kansas and its reputation. But anyway, I went back there for a friend's wedding and stayed with my buddy who I used to work with. And had just, kind of a supernatural-ish encounter while I was staying at his apartment. And, just for context. So when you walk into his apartment, you walk into the living room. And if you look in the back left corner of the living room, there's a hallway that goes about 5 feet to the left. And then takes an abrupt right turn and goes down back, you know, straight ahead to a bathroom. And along the left side of that said hallway is his bedroom and a storage closet. And then on the right side, back corner of the living room, is a doorway to the kitchen. And along the right side of the living room itself is his couch. So I came and I set up my air mattress at the foot of that couch so I could, when I lay down on my left side, I'm looking, you know, toward that back left hallway. So I can see both the bedroom doors and I can see the corner of the hallway, but can't see very much of the left side of that first bit of the hallway. And so, you know, the day before everything goes down and we get back and I sleep for 8 hours. So sleep off any booze from the day before and wake up about 8:30. And of course, you know, mess around on my phone for a little bit till about 9:00. And then prop myself up on my elbow after putting my phone down and look up, and it's not a figure, but a dark spot. So he has blackout curtains because his window faces to the east. So the whole apartment's kind of dim, but not dark enough that I couldn't see door frames of both the closet and the bedroom. When you look down that hallway, you can make out the door frames, you can make out the knobs on them, you can see everything. But there was a dark form. There was, it wasn't lumpy, but it was circular. It was almost like a blobbish form, and it was about 3 feet tall, and then touching the carpet below, and it was almost as if it was coming around the corner. And it stopped me in my tracks. I sat there and just stared and was kind of dumbfounded for a little bit. I was like, okay, yeah, maybe it's just a dark spot in my vision, but it blocked out the shape that was partially coming around the corner, blocked out the door frame. So it spooked me a little bit. You couldn't see the door frame through it. And it was just this dark mass on the ground that was about 3 feet tall. And then after about 5 seconds, it just moves directly to the left toward the other corner of that junction that I can't see. It just goes straight left really quickly. And I sat there for a minute just wondering. I immediately turned on the flashlight to my cell phone and just sort of stared there, you know, for about 2 minutes. And I could have dismissed it really quick, just kind of snap of the finger. Oh, it was a dark spot. I was staring at my phone. I was looking at stuff. Maybe it was like an image that I had seen and recently, and it just kind of imprinted. But the kicker was you could hear the carpet move, or you could hear the movement on the carpet. It was like, just stand up and do, you know, the electric slide on your carpet. And it was that sound. It shuffled. And that's what really spooked me. It moved, and the carpet made a sound as it did. And yeah, it took me about 2 minutes before I stood up and walked over there and examined the whole hallway with the flashlight on, and turned on the living room light and looked around, and there's nothing. All the doors were shut. Nothing was moved. There's nothing on the floor, nothing on the carpet. And yeah, I just kind of sat back down on the couch. And about 30 minutes later, my friend woke up, and I asked him, you know, hey, were you up about 30 minutes ago, just kind of moving around, and, you know, were you walking or something in the bedroom? He's like, no, I've been in bed. I got out of bed, you know, just got out of bed. I was laying in there. I was like, you didn't move. And he's like, no. And then it was after this incident that I realized about a year and a half, maybe, oh geez, even 2.5 years ago, he had told us at work that he was laying in bed and something tugged on his hand while he was awake. Something tugged, you know, and it scared him. He came to work the next day and he says, hey, something pulled on my finger. Something tugged my hand. And of course, we at work just, you know, gave him shit for the next week for it. But I suddenly remembered that after this happened, and I go, hey, in all seriousness, and then I explain it to him, and he goes, oh yeah, no, there's been tons that's happened here. I said, really? And he's like, yeah, the first 3 months after I moved in, there was stuff happening regularly. And he goes, then I just, you know, kind of learned to ignore it, and, you know, it kind of ignored me. And I was like, okay, well, what's happened? And he's like, well, you know, multiple bulbs in the kitchen and the living room, things like that, have flashed. Like, these bulbs have, you know, done that. And he says they're random, they're sporadic. Sometimes they do it just out of nowhere. And he goes, you know, it's an older apartment. It could be, you know, my electric company, it could be shortages, could be things like that. But, you know, he's skeptical like that. But he was like, yeah, it just happens. And he goes, you know, other times that I hear the doorknobs move at night, you know, they kind of rattle a little bit. Just different ones, the closet, my bedroom, you know, doorknobs will rattle and then doors will be open. And he's like, yeah, you know, I know even with the AC going, or even I might have a window open, but I could have the windows closed and the AC could be off, and I'll wake up and some doors will be cracked and another door will be wide open. And then his final one was that kind of spooked him the most, was he was coming around the corner going past his bedroom. And he told me, he said, I distinctly remember I had my light on, but not the fan. He's got one of those overhead fixtures. The fan was not on, and it hadn't been on that whole day, but the light was on. And he walked by and he looked in his bedroom, and the fan was moving, and he could see the shadows moving along the wall that it was casting, along the ceiling and the wall. And so he walked by his bedroom and he stopped, and he backpedaled and he looked at it, and everything was still. And he was like, you know, you can believe me or not, but I distinctly remember that fan not being on. And that one, yeah, that was broad daylight, kind of spooked me. So it was really neat. You know, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I had never had anything like that happen to me. And, you know, you listen to some of these stories people tell and you go, oh, why didn't you pull out your camera? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? But then in the moment of a sighting or anything weird like this, you just stop. You just kind of freeze, and you're like, did that happen? Wait a minute, what? And then 5 minutes later, your brain is almost telling yourself, no, that didn't happen. That wasn't real. That didn't happen. But yeah, it kind of a spooky little thing. Just wanted to share this with the podcast and share with you. And yeah, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Eric. You could hear it move on the carpet. That's the part of the story that got me. Because it's one thing to see a blank blob in a darkened room. Our eyes do all sorts of strange things when they're working in low visibility. But to hear it shuffling, which would imply that it had some sort of weight behind it, well, that's absolutely terrifying. And what was this thing? I have no idea, frankly. So I'm going to open this up to the listeners. If you have an experience with something similar, let's hear about it. Have you seen a black blob that dragged itself across the carpet? If so, please give me a call, 888-608-NIGHT. And until then, thank you again, Eric, for the nightmare fuel.
So I was surprised when it happened.
But this is a
All right, who here is ready for a monster tale? Selena from Pennsylvania. Give the people what they want.
Hi, Derek. This is Selena from Central Pennsylvania, and I have a story for you about a Bigfoot-ish sighting that I had about 12 years ago. And I say Bigfoot-ish because it doesn't really fit the traditional description of what a Bigfoot is supposed to look like, but I don't really have another category to put it into, so I'm going to leave that up to your discretion. But anyway, I was 17. It was 2011 in the summer before my senior year of high school, and I had a boyfriend at the time whose grandfather had retired to a cabin in the mountains. And I wish I could tell you exactly where we were. It was the only time I had ever been there, and I didn't drive. Plus, to this day, I am notoriously bad with directions. I know that we drove about 2 or 3 hours in a general western direction from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where his family lived at the time, to get there, if that gives you any idea of where we might have been. But anyway, at one point while we were there, my boyfriend and I were fighting about something, who knows, dumb teenage stuff, and we were sitting in the kitchen, and it had become very clear to his mom that there was some tension in the air. So she suggested that we go out and ride around on the four-wheeler for a little while, as you do in the mountains, I guess. So we agreed to go, just because I think it was an activity where we didn't really have to talk to each other. So we basically rode around in silence, looking at the scenery. He was driving and I was riding on the back. Obviously, houses up there were pretty few and far between, and when you did see them, they were surrounded by miles of forests. But there was one that we came across that was on our left-hand side. It was a little white rancher. It was a very cute little house, and it had like a cleared area of land to the right side of it as a little yard before it turned into the forest again. And I looked over at it, and something was lying on its back in the grass and sat straight up and turned its head to look at us as we were riding past. It was definitely ape-like, It never stood up fully at any point in time, so I don't have an exact height on it, but I would approximate around 7 feet tall. It had patches of black and white fur all over it, which was the first thing that stood out to me as not being like a normal Bigfoot, is that it was not one uniform color. It had these large random patches of black and white all over its body. And it kind of got up at this point, but it was more crouching or squatting down, kind of leaning forward on its hands to support itself, as you would see like an ape or a gorilla doing. And at this point, it started to run, you know, propelling itself forward with its arms. That's when I noticed that its arms and legs were very long and thin. It was very lanky compared to like the traditional bulky Bigfoot description. If it was standing, I would imagine its hands would probably reach its knees. Like, its arms were just very long compared to the rest of its body. And I thought it looked very awkward running like that, because that's not what you would traditionally see, you know, in an animal that's running like that. But it kept pretty good pace with the four-wheeler. It never really got ahead. I feel like if it did, my boyfriend would have seen it, but he did not. I don't know if he was just looking in the other direction or if he was distracted or what, but I was the only one who saw it. And I didn't say anything to him about it, which is apparently something that I do when I see something paranormal. It's not the first time that it's happened. I don't know if I'm trying to not draw attention to myself. I don't know if I'm just in shock or what, but I usually don't tell the other people that are there with me if I see something. So I just kind of watched it run off into the forest. And we eventually made it back to the cabin, and I finally broke the silence for the first time in quite a while and was like, "Hey, I saw something out there." And he asked me to describe it to him, so I did, and he asked if I wanted to go back out and look for it again. And I kind of figured that we weren't going to see it again, but if there was a chance to see it again, and also for someone else to also see it, I definitely wanted to take that chance. But also, I never felt threatened in any way. Obviously, it was running away from us, so I agreed to go back out. And we drove around the way that we had before, and of course, we didn't see it again. But ever since then, on and off, I've been trying to do some digging around online to see if anybody has seen anything similar. And I keep finding, you know, hundreds of stories about traditional Bigfoot sightings, which are awesome, and I believe in those as well, but it's just not what I saw. And I wanted to put my story out here on your podcast to see if there is anyone who saw a creature like this, but also to get your opinion. I had actually originally seen you on Paranormal Caught on Camera a couple years back, and I don't know how scripted or unscripted the show is, but you always seem to have a very informed and logical approach to different things. I had spoken briefly with another paranormal podcaster about this sighting, and he said there are some theories about there being like different types of Bigfoot, in the same way there are different types of birds or different kinds of dogs, you know, kind of a relative of the traditional description, which makes sense to me, but I just kind of wanted to get your input on it, but also to see if anybody else had seen anything like it. So I really appreciate you giving us this outlet to tell our stories, and I hope to hear from you. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Selena. Well, you know, I try to be as honest with all of this content as I possibly can. No, I don't try to fudge things so they fit or force things so they align, as much as I would like to sometimes, because that sure beats a long night of research. But unfortunately, I believe I'm honest to a fault. Believe it or not, this show would be much scarier if I were to make things up. But you see, the bottom line here is this. There are plenty of mysteries left in the world. There's absolutely no need for any of us to fake more. Now, as for the story. South Central Pennsylvania. An ape-like, patchy-colored, spindly-legged creature. Now, Selena, I know you said your experience didn't quite match up with the standard Bigfoot description. And in saying so, you'd be correct. Sasquatch or Bigfoot are typically described as being much heavier, bulkier, more like a silverback gorilla. But believe it or not, what I'm trying to tell you here is that
what Selena described perfectly matches other descriptions of a creature that calls South Central Pennsylvania home. They call it the Albatwitch. And if the following description is correct, I believe that Selena saw one. They're described as a small humanoid figure, roughly the size of a child, with long arms and a thin, wiry frame, reminiscent of an orangutan. Its fur-covered body is said to be a patchwork of mossy greens and earthy browns, blending seamlessly with the dense forest foliage that it inhabits. Like apes, the Albatwitch is rumored to possess incredible agility and dexterity, using its prehensile feet and hands to climb trees and snatch berries and nuts. Witnesses reported moving swiftly and silently through the underbrush, emitting high-pitched cries and often stealing apples from local orchards, which lent it its nickname, a Pennsylvania Dutch term meaning apple snitch. And if you're out there having doubts that it's an Albatwitch that Selena saw, notice how similar the details are in this alleged sighting, which was taken from a local resource, Lancaster Online.
It was 6 o'clock in the morning, driving up Route 23 Marietta Pike towards Marietta. And as I'm driving up there approaching the intersection, I saw a figure walking in the middle of the road. But as I got closer, all the hair on my arms started standing up, and I seen this wasn't a person. And I couldn't believe my eyes. It was about 5 foot tall, covered in black hair, but it was real skinny. This creature turned around, looked at me, our eyes met, and it was gone. All I remember seeing was the two yellow eyes, and it was gone.
I don't know. It sounds awfully similar to me. Now, what makes this sighting and its connection to local lore exciting is this. There are Bigfoot reports all over the country. Every state, save for Hawaii, has received at least one credible report. And 99.9% of those reports describe a drastically different beast than what is said to inhabit the lands west of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And if Selena didn't, in fact, know about this legend beforehand, well, frankly, that only adds to the credibility. Now, this isn't the first time the old Albatwitch was mentioned on this program. Season 9, Episode 20, the Hometown Legend Special, also touched on the Albatwitch briefly. And you know, I have a funny feeling it won't be the last time we hear from them either. And let me tell you, I'm looking forward to diving deeper. So thank you again, Selena, for giving us that opportunity. Now, folks, don't forget about our merch shop. You can pick up hats, stickers, t-shirts, bags, pins, posters, a whole slew of different Monsters Among Us themed items. And right now, for a limited time, take advantage of our Dogman Days of Summer sale. 15% off the entire Monsters Among Us shop all summer long. Visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click that shop tab. Now, speaking of hometown legends, now's the time to start calling those in, folks. A quick reminder that a hometown legend is any hometown story, tale, or piece of historical significance. But it has to be somehow paranormal in nature. That season finale special is quickly approaching, so don't waste any time in calling those in. And it's also time to announce the theme of next season's premiere special. And I think I have a pretty good one this time around. It gives us all kinds of opportunities, at the very least. Well, the theme of that special episode will be the Amusement Workers Special. Carnival workers, circus performers, roller coaster operators, Disney cast members, actors, crew, tour boat captains, pixie dust spreader on the tilt-a-whirl. Whatever you consider amusement, then I suppose that fits the criteria. Now remember to say the word amusement near the beginning of your call so we can make sure to file it correctly. But those are your marching orders. And I'm looking forward to what yins send in. Now, folks, for tonight's closer. Derek in the UK. Welcome to tonight's program.
Hey, Derek. It's Derek from the UK here. Just started listening to the podcast. Loving it. Doing it a bit weird, listening from the latest episodes going back in time. So that's fun. Yeah, I've got a story for you, relating back to a time when I was working on the London Underground as an electrician. This was about, I'd say, maybe year 2000, and maybe a bit later. I was working at Aldgate Station, and just doing some electrical work, preliminary work for a big contract that was going on. There was me and one other electrician in the team. Yeah, and, well, basically what happened, we were working in electricity, one of the electricity rooms that they have all over the underground station. And through a moment of lack of concentration, shall we say, I received an electric shock, which I found out later threw me backwards, and I was knocked out. The next thing I remember was being woken up by paramedics. And, yeah, and then, you know, I was put in an ambulance and taken to one of the local hospitals. Where I was looked after and put on monitoring for 24 hours, as is the way we do things over here. So after the shift, and my colleague who was working with a chap called Alan, very straight up and down chap, came to check on me, see if I was all right. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning, so we worked night shifts at engineering hours. So yeah, it was very early, it was all very quiet, and he came into the cubicle where I was, and you know, after checking that I was okay and everything else, I could see something was wrong with him. He wasn't himself. He was, you know, something was bothering him. So I asked him, I said, you know, what's the matter? I'm okay. There's nothing for you to be worried about. I'm fine. And he said, yeah, it wasn't that. He said, he explained to me what had happened, how he found me. I mean, I need to explain a little bit about the systems they used on the underground in London. At the time, I mean, this was 20 years ago, so it might now change, but at the time we had key holders, and to be a key holder, to get into these electrical rooms and the signalling rooms and the communication rooms, you had to do several, you know, several courses and things like that, so not everybody had sets of keys. Generally, it was one person in a team that had sets of keys, so we had a set of keys between us, obviously, and I was working in this electrical switch room. He explained to me that when I received the shock, I was thrown backwards and I hit the door, closing the door behind him. Now, the keys were inside, locked inside the room with me then, because these doors self-lock. There's no kind of, once they close, they lock up and you have to open them again. He explained that he heard the bang. He was in the next room. He came running around, checking if I was all right, and the door was closed. But there's a porthole window in the door, so he could see into the room. And he said what he saw was strange. He could see that I was leant up against the door, but he could also see a figure in there with me. He described it as, I mean, this is a second-hand account. I mean, I was unconscious at the time, but he described it as a little old lady. And he said she was kneeling at my feet and she had a hand on my leg. And he said he was banging on the door and trying to attract her attention, obviously trying to open the door so he could get to me. By this point, he was getting quite worried and quite panicked, and he said he was banging on the door and she was getting no reaction from this lady that was in this room with me. So, realising that she wasn't responding to his bangs and there was no way he could access me or get through the door, he went to get another set of keys, which you have to go to the station supervisor for, who will hold a set of keys. He got these, and, you know, it was about, he said about 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes. Journey to going to the station supervisor's office, then coming back down to the electrical switch room. He said by the time he got back down there, the figure was gone. There was no one in there. It was just me. You could see me in there. He said there was no way the person could have got out. He couldn't understand it. He's a very straight-laced bloke. He's very straight up and down. He couldn't understand it that I was leaning up against the door. My body was propped up against the door. And how could she have got out of a door that opened inwards when I was blocking the doorway with, you know, there was no physical way that she could have got out and then removed me and put me back up there. So he just didn't know what was going on. He was very, I don't know, shocked, I suppose. That's really, I suppose, the word you'd used. And he couldn't understand it. So anyway, so the upshot is he managed to open the door, pushed me away from the door, got in there, the paramedics got me. I was kept in the hospital for 24 hours for observation. But yeah, when I got out the next day, we had to go back to the station to fill in the accident book, obviously because there's an accident, we had to fill it all in. So we were filling the accident book in. The station supervisor asked me what had gone, asked both of us what had gone on, and Alan, being straight and honest, told him the truth. The station supervisor then did something which was quite, I thought was quite odd. He took out another diary, apart from the accident book, another book, which he recorded, you know, things in, and he took down the story. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, was the accident book not enough? You know, why are you recording this, something else? And he turned around and he said, well, this isn't the first time this has happened, apparently. This figure has been seen around the station. There's another incident, apparently, a good while beforehand, that another electrician or another worker had fallen across the rails, and the same figure was seen stroking his hair, or the same figure of an old lady was seen sitting with him stroking his hair. So whether this entity or apparition is just, I don't know, really, I don't know, who knows anything, but something similar has happened before. So, and Aldgate is known as quite an active station. Yeah, so that's my story. Keep up the good work. I think your show is brilliant. And yeah, speak to you again soon. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Thank you, Derek. Is this the first time I've shared a call from another Derek on this program? How is that possible? You think after almost 9 years, that would have happened one other time. And maybe it did, and I'm just forgetting. But that definitely caught my attention. And you know, I was once told by someone from the UK, no less, that Derek is an old man's name. Well, I can tell you, that wasn't true at the time. But with each day that passes, I think maybe she might have been onto something. Anyway, great to still have you with us, Derek. That story certainly sounds harrowing. And man, I'd like to get my hands on that book full of other ghostly encounters, if only to read the most similar of them to you here tonight. But sadly, I do not have access to that long list of similar encounters. But what I do have for you is a tale of another electrician that was saved by some sort of mysterious miracle.
A butterfly.
My little buddy.
The sign of a new beginning.
That's my angel.
And a life Jason Giroux says he might not have without this short moment.
I should have died.
Giroux says he was working on power lines when this butterfly landed on his arm. The next day, he says the butterfly found him again.
20 miles to the new job, and here he is waiting on me.
Hours after he took this video in Gladstone, Giroux says electricity flashed off a live wire, hit him in the face, and sent an electrical shock through his body.
Everything went blurry. I couldn't speak. My arms just kind of locked up.
He spent 4 days in a hospital bed at VCU Medical Center in Richmond with burns on his face, up his arms, and across his chest. Through it all, he had this video on repeat.
I was thinking about the butterfly because the butterfly landed on this arm, and the doctor said I should have lost this arm. How much current flew through.
He says with voltage that high, there's only one explanation.
No one walks away with minor burns. I truly believe it was an angel. An angel saved my life. Saved my arm.
Now that clip, courtesy of WSET, ABC News 13, out of Lynchburg, Virginia. And it's not exactly like Derek's entry, but it's not unlike it either. Both tradesmen were injured on the job, both recovered mysteriously, and both doing so with the help of the unexplained. Oh, and for you nature lovers that are curious, the butterfly that landed on Jason's arm in that video, well, it was a silvery checker spot butterfly. Orange, black, white, and apparently life-saving. So thank you again, Derek, for sharing your call. Again, I'm glad to hear that everything's okay, because I have no idea who saved you that evening. But I'm certainly glad that she did. Thank you again, Derek. And folks, that's going to do it for this evening. A huge thanks for sticking around. I have a lot more to share with you, so don't go anywhere just yet. But first, I do have to get this out of the way. Monsters Among Us podcast is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Delaney Bowers. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Please give us a like and follow at Facebook and Instagram. And while you're at it, venture on over to YouTube and give us a like and follow there as well. And since you're on the internet, maybe leave us a rate and review wherever that sort of thing is possible. It'd be nice to combat some of those nasty reviews we get from time to time. Don't forget that every Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern, you can visit the unxnetwork.com to hear the show played on digital radio. And lastly, tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Co.AG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. And that's all I got for you tonight, folks. Unless you're hip to how we run things, of course. It was a great pleasure to have you with us tonight, and I trust I'll catch you back here next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. Until then, find yourself someplace cool, and have yourself a good night. This is the secret entry. It's kind of like the post-credit scene on your favorite film. We play one more story before we shove off to the great beyond, our after-show program over on Patreon. And in this bonus slot, we play the strangest and weirdest calls I can get my hands on. For example, calls like Jake's out of the Dairylands of Wisconsin.
Good evening, Derek, Monster Family. I love sharing a Facebook group with you guys. Jake from Green Bay, as I referenced in a post, and this is a good chunk of my childhood. Spent about half my childhood on the Oneida Reservation. Obviously, half as native as my mother. We couldn't stay without her. So anyway, it was a trailer home, kind of on a hill, Sandy Hill, on clay. Allegedly, it's a mound. We don't know that for sure. I had some friends that were not real. Occasionally, I would see extra doors in the house. Oh, by the by, this is right after season 14, episode 19, with the gnome call. That's what's behind the doors, man. So these doors were little Jacob-sized, and so were the friends. Would have been younger than 8, because that's when my parents got divorced, and we kind of ceased to have good access to property on the res. Dude, I'm shaking. I'm at a truck stop and it's dark out and I'm shaking. So yeah, these little guys, not little at the time, but they had a whole other world once I went through the door. And I can't give you specifics of all the times, because it's like what happened X time you went to work. I did it so many times. I just kept going through these doors and hanging out with my friends. And sometimes I would get found. At least 3 times I was found elsewhere on the reservation with no clear path as to how little boy got there. I think at least one was in the dead of winter. Dude, I'm scared right now. Hi, everybody. So, yeah, gnomes, they occasionally had the pointy hat. They were dressed kind of about right for other people on the res, denim sweatshirts. But they were my size, and it was definitely different places and different communities. Oh, mother saw another one of my imaginary friends once. We call him Medicine Man. He was a real Ho-Chunk Native American. That place, man, I wish I had more for you guys. But yeah, gnomes that I talked to, an old Indian I talked to who didn't like the gnomes and didn't want me to go with the gnomes, stuff disappeared. I have a vivid memory of a gray alien in that bedroom. Wow, I wish I had pictures. I wish I had more for you guys, but there is my childhood. Bye.
Thank you, Jake. I told you this space was reserved for the weirdest of the weird and the wildest of the wild. And what could possibly be more weird or wild than a little boy slipping through a secret door to a world of little people? But if you ask the folks on these reservations, they'll tell you that it's not all that strange after all. Over the years, it's something they've grown to accept, respect, and even fear. In fact, Jake's tribe has an oral history about figures known as the Joga, which could be the explanation for these strange, tiny figures. The Joga are a race of small, humanoid nature spirits from Iroquois folklore, sometimes referred to in English as dwarves or pygmies. They are usually invisible, but sometimes reveal themselves to humans, particularly to children, elders, and medicine people. They are described as knee-high to around 4 foot tall. The Joga love games and playing tricks, which can be dangerous if they are disrespected. The Joga have even been claimed to cause illness in homes and neighborhoods that are built on sites which they are attracted to. So at the very least, there are verbal legends that were passed down over generations that seem to support the claims that Jake is making, which in turn makes this case extremely intriguing. But for now, I'm afraid the trail has run cold. But thank you again, Jake, for sharing that story. That's not something you hear about every day. All right, folks, speaking of wild experiences, it's time to go beyond. Now, if you're not a paying customer, I'm afraid this is where you get off. Unless, of course, you fancy joining us. To do so, simply visit patreon.com and search for Monsters Among Us podcast. Then join the $5 level for this upcoming bonus content, or the $1 level to get all the main show programming ad-free. Or try either for free for 7 days simply by visiting our website, monstersamonguspodcast.com, and by clicking on the Patreon tab. It's in the beyond that you get to hear stories like C's from parts unknown. Now, a quick warning, parental guidance is suggested for the following stories. More on that in a moment.
Hey, Derek. Guess you can call me C. I want to tell a little story about what happened to me. So, I went to a party one time, and kind of talking to this girl, and this guy got really freaking pissed off about it. And then, you know, he left. He's pissed.